I have to sing a bit of Andrea Bocelli if they win.
In your boxers, is that what you said?
No, I'm not in my boxers. Give me a break.
We're coming home, Nathan.
You've got the flags outside the house, I presume, have you?
Green, white and orange.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast and download the OTB Sports app.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. Donating at least 100,000 to Irish football via England Goals this summer. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 8 o'clock this evening because we got commentary of the Lions against the Sharks from 5. Now, football. We're joined by the former Republic of Ireland international and Liverpool legend Mark Lawrenson, football correspondent of the Irish Independent Dan McDonald, and the UEFA Pro License coach Shane Keegan to talk about the beautiful game over the next hour. All About England initially, our coverage on Off the Ball with Paddy Power, Save Our Game, donating €10,000 to Irish football for every England goal which is scored at the Euros. The 10 goals so far amounting to €100,000 for Irish football. Text number 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball, listen on YouTube Talk, watch us on the digital and social channels for Off the Ball, for Periscope on Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store now. Now, to be fair, England is where the modern game was invented, in the 19th century, where the laws of football were established. It's the home of the best league in the world, the Premier League. It's a country obsessive about the game. 26.3 million people watched the England-Denmark semi-final. This is their moment, their biggest game in 55 years. And in life, we should not begrudge people their moment, should we? So it's not too arrogant to sing it's coming home, as annoying as it may be. But do you want England to win tomorrow night? Do you wish them well? Or are you all on Italy? Are you in the Italy camp? 53106, the text number to get involved in the conversation for a cost of 30 cents. Mark Lawrenson, do you want England to win tomorrow?
Oh, how can you possibly ask me that question, John? Yes. the deliberation is obvious. Because, you know what? They probably deserve it, in all honesty. It's a real close call between themselves and the Italians. And we know that England, bar one game, have had home advantage, and obviously as the crowds have come in and got bigger, that's massive. But I just like the way that the manager's gone about his business, etc. We've spoken about this, really studying former competitions, how teams approach them, etc. He's got a good squad. They're very difficult to score against, as we've seen. The only one, of course, the Odegaard goal for Denmark. He's got lots of players off the bench. You could all argue we could almost play two teams and there wouldn't be too much of a massive difference between the two. And I like him. I know him quite well, Gareth Southgate. I'd like it for him as much as anything. Some of the rubbish that you read in the papers over here at the moment is absolutely bonkers about. Yes, I understand Neat's coming home and, you know, every dog has his day and all those kind of things. But some of the stuff they write, you think actually that they've been beating Brazil in every single game they've played for. But yeah, I would like them to win. And
you say you know him quite well, Mark. Do you think he'll be calm tomorrow? Because that's a really big deal.
Yeah, no, he is. He's very, very calm. He's very thoughtful. He's got a nice way with players. I think he explains to players as well why they are playing and also why they aren't playing. I think everybody is totally involved. He's got a really human side to him as well, John. And I think they've dealt brilliantly with, you know, Black Lives Matter, with absolutely all-encompassing parts of that and everything else that we kind of live with in modern-day life as well. And he's been very much the leader. Doesn't get carried away. I mean, if you saw his interview after Scotland, where that was obviously Scotland's Euro Cup final for them, and you knew underneath that he was thinking, we always knew this was going to be an unbelievably bad game and hard game to play, but he got the point, and they were down. They then had 4 points, so he knew they were exactly on course what they wanted to do. He's just a really, really good lad. He will not be carried away with anything. He really seriously won't.
Sadly, it's a year to the day since Jack Charlton passed, actually.
Yeah.
And we know what a bond and you played under him that he forged with Ireland, and we got to some memorable days at Euro 88, Italia 90 and World Cup 94. It seems to me with Gareth Southgate, the bond, the spirit, the unity is almost more important than things like tactics when you look at the England team over the last 20 years since Venables, Robson.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, he wants to win this tournament and he won't admit it, but and maybe desperate's the wrong word, but you desperately love to win it, because it would mean so much, not to him. He's not particularly out for a game for himself, although obviously he will get it. But just for the game itself, for the Premier League, for all his players, and, you know, stuff like going out the World Cup, what the one before, Russia, wasn't it? They were the only team to lose the first two games, and they completely bombed out. And generally, over the last 20 years, England have turned up at competition, and all the journalists are going, oh, they've got a really good side, they should get to the semis. But there's been no essence of results before those competitions, that they were actually anywhere near getting the semis, and they haven't been. But he did so in Russia, which was good. So he had something to build upon as well. And he's looked at all the players that he's got. And I think it's, you know, if you're a manager, especially if you're an international manager, you can't sign anyone. You can't go and sign Lionel Messi. So you deal with the card that you're given. And he's looked at all these players and he thought, you know what? I'll make us really, really difficult to beat. And then we've got Sterling, Kane, Foden, Grealish, Saka, you know, whoever can come on and change the game if they haven't already started. And I think he's been very, very intelligent, just looking at what he's got and who he's got and thinking, this is the best way to deal with it. And they've dealt with it. And generally, you know, they've rode a little bit of luck. I mean, against the Germans, they had a great chance, Germany, early on. And if they'd scored that, I think it would have been a different result. Then Müller had a chance to make it 1-1, etc. But that's what you're going to get in games at this level. And I know it's Italy. And we know with Italy, they've been very, very good. They're also masters of the dark arts if they need to be, if they get in front. We saw that against Belgium. But they don't exactly shake in the boots, so they never seem to, the Italians, when they play England. But they will be worried about England, and I think they'll be worried about the likes of the pace from, you know, if it's Sterling, whoever else in the wide position as well, because as good as their two central defenders are and the tip-top, they ain't quick, John. And I think that'll be the whole sort of emphasis on England's training in the last couple of days will be, How can we get in and behind Bonucci and Chiellini?
Yeah. Shane Keegan, have you got the Italian jersey on tomorrow night?
Look, I'm very conflicted on it, I suppose, John, to be honest with you, because there's two completely separate arguments for me on it. And you look at the team, you look at the players that make up that team, and there's no doubt there's some fantastic people within that group. There's absolutely no doubt about it. You know, you go into some of the things that some of those people have achieved off of the field in the last 12 months, I suppose, particularly Sterling and Rashford. But right throughout the team, I'd be a big fan of Henderson's and how he carries himself. I'd be a huge fan of Harry Kane's and how he carries himself. Gareth Southgate, I wouldn't know him in the way Laura does, obviously, but he presented to us on our pro license. We were out in Nyon for a week out in Switzerland, and he was one of the guest presenters. And he came across really, really well, John. He came across really well. Kind of to back up Laura's point, I suppose the thing with him was he didn't really do a deep dive on tactics in that conversation or even really into coaching methodology. The whole conversation with him that day was about relationships and relationship building and the importance of relationships and the important about caring about the person first before you care about the player and unity and all of that kind of thing. And I think all of that is shining through very, very much so at the moment in the way that he's built built a real, real group, Peter, built a real, real group with no fuss, none of the usual drama really that comes with them. And he's an impressive guy. He's an impressive guy. And I suppose with all that would push me towards shouting for them. And I've also got a six-year-old at home here in the house who thinks Harry Kane is the greatest thing since sliced bread and just can't wrap his head around how we could be shouting against any team that Harry Kane is playing on, because he doesn't see the difference between Spurs and England.
Wait until he leaves Spurs, Shane.
Yeah, well, that could be very, very different. But on the flip side, you know, the media, John, the thoughts of the front pages of some of the tabloid newspapers, if they win it. And it's unfair to say they're fans. Sometimes people say they're fans as if their fans are a collective.
It's a minority, really, isn't it? You're talking
about. It is. But unfortunately, it's hard to ever remove that minority from your thinking. It's impossible to remove that minority from your thinking. And I honestly don't know. What I did with the semi-final, John, was I stuck it on and I had my mind made up whether I was up for them or whether I wasn't up for them. And I was flip-flopping all over the place. I really, really was. When Denmark went 1-0, I was hoping England would equalise. When England went 2-1, I was hoping Denmark would equalise. I didn't know where I stood, really, to be honest. And I'll probably be the same when I turn on the telly tomorrow night.
Dan McDonald, where do you stand? I think you're in the you're going to be wearing the blue at Zuri shirt tomorrow, aren't you?
Yeah, well, like, it's a strange one, really, because I was a bit I didn't know how I felt watching the semi final on Wednesday, until Denmark scored, at which point I just instinctively sort of let out a roar of some description, which was very misguided because I had an 8-month-old daughter upstairs that I then woke up. It was minding for the evening. And her mother was out, so I spent the next 5 minutes dealing and missed a portion of the game. So, but like it was a gut reaction, I think, you know. But maybe it's because I really liked the Denmark story too, you know, that I thought Denmark winning the tournament would have been fantastic, you know. And I sort of had that sense that some of the pre-match talk from the English point of view was completely underestimating Denmark and talking about England being in the final. So in that context, like, I probably wanted Denmark to do it. And yeah, I think probably bottom line is that I probably would be hard to stomach, but it's a great final. And I don't think, you know, well, my gut feeling is probably, yeah, I'd like Italy to win it. I like their story. I'm not sure if England winning it is something that's going to like sicken me for days or weeks. You know, there's a likability factor with aspects of the team that I don't think it would be as grating if this England team won as it would have been if the so-called golden generation team had won. You know, the sort of the, you know, Sven's team and the team with the sort of Wags and Baden-Baden in 2006 and that England team. Like this one here, it probably stands for something a bit better. And there's some great characters within it. And, you know, to be honest, like, you know, the Italian team are quite likable. But, I mean, you know, not all massively likable in some way. So I was probably all in on Denmark. I'm not all in as much on the Italian thing. But then, listen, I'll probably hear the Italian anthem being booed and change my view then completely at that stage. Because, I mean, it's a great anthem. And yeah. I mean, if my enjoyment of that is ruined, I mean, that's it.
Yeah,
it's
over. We can all change our minds, can't we? It's interesting. You wrote about this, and I would agree with this. This is not an accident for England. An elite player performance plan for young kids, academies across the UK. Richard Scudamore, the Premier League boss at the time, getting behind supporting youth football in England to get better players through the English system, academies, grassroots, and an engineering to a degree of what's become a very, very good country for a young talent. Their average age of their squad, under 25. They won the Euro under 19 in 2017. They won the World Cups at under 17 and under 20 in that year, 2017 as well. So it's not an accident. Maybe this can be engineered.
No, I mean, like, this is the thing. I mean, yes, you can definitely argue the toss over that they've had a bit of luck in terms of aspects of this competition and decided to draw. But the fact is, like, they've been in the last semi-finals of the last World Cup. They're in the final of this competition. All the underage stuff you mentioned, like, they have been knocking on the door, and I think they will be consistently knocking on the door going forward. And listen, I know that this is always what happens, you know. Holland do well and we talk about Holland, and Belgium do well and we talk about, you know, and it can all be sort of very faddy. But like, there is, you know, I spoke to a number of people this week, kind of properly involved, I suppose, underage football on both sides of the Irish Sea. You know, some on the record and some off the record, you know, just about, you know, what's been happening over there. And look, we know, like, everyone knows, I mean, the Premier League is an all-consuming global monster, you know, that's watched all around the world, that's got, you know, TV money pouring into it. And yet, really, there was never a joined up sort of thinking between, say, the Premier League and the wealth of the Premier League and the fortunes of youth development and the national team in England. I mean, there was stuff that was happening, but really this elite performance plan, as you mentioned, that was introduced around 2012. It was a guy called Jed Roddy. And then, as you mentioned, Scudamore in the Premier League sanctioned it. It was enacted by people like Jed Roddy and the academy directors at the various clubs. And without going too deep into it, but it was to do with real setting a sort of a grading and categorization of the academies in the UK and saying you need to do this, 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 and this to meet, you know, certain criteria. You need to have this amount of staff, this amount of pitches. You know, it was, I spoke to John Morling at Brighton, who have an absolutely superb academy, about all the criteria that they needed to introduce, and they're audited every couple of years to make sure that they're living up to this. And it wasn't without its controversy. You've seen some clubs in England get rid of their academies, like Brentford and Huddersfield and a few places like that, because they can't compete. They feel it's weighted too heavily towards the top clubs who can take players from other clubs reasonably cheaply. But the bottom line is, you know, they have got their act together and channeled some of the Premier League money towards player development. And then Dan Ashworth went into the England FA in 2014, spoke about this thing called the England DNA, which is about having you know, a sort of a coherent path and things in common as you move through the age groups. Gareth Southgate was a big part of that at the time as the under-21 manager. And basically, yeah, as you've listed off things that have happened there, it's all come to fruition. And listen, we know it. Like, you look at the England squad, and you know, we can reel off names like Foden and, you know, Saka and Sancho and Rashford play tomorrow. You can even talk about players who aren't in the squad at all, like, you know, James Maddison and, you know, people like that. You know, really talented attacking players, and you can see that this production line is churning them out, and they are here to stay as a force, and it's not a fluke. There's a plan.
Mark, you've been seeing that coming as well the last few years, given all the football you watch in England.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, wherever you go now, I mean, certainly in the Premier League, it's basically no stone left unturned. There's still a certain amount of kind of fishing in the sea, not with a rod, but with a trawler. So you scoop up absolutely everybody, and I think there's still a little bit of thinking, and especially if you're sort of one of the London clubs, is that you just go and get every single player that you can, and half of the reason is that you know, you're stopping the other clubs from getting those players. But no, it's good, and I think as well now is that the great thing for the academy is they can see the players that are coming through and representing the country, not just the clubs. So there's an absolute route for all sorts of players. And they've just got better and better. They got better organised. And I think everybody realises that the system at the moment is very, very good. You said about the under-17s, was it under-19s, etc. And they look at the moment, John, as though they're going to be a force to be reckoned with for quite a while. But obviously you just don't know. Even some of the players who are in England squad at the moment, will they still be in the England squad in 2 years' time?
You never
know with football, but... Don't. Certainly, it looks very, very healthy from the Football Association's point of view, certainly.
Yeah, 38% of the Premier League players that started games last season qualified to play for England, which was the highest in quite a while. 53106 for the texts. Quite a lot of support for England from the audience so far. I like Italy, but England need it more. I've no problem whatsoever if they win, as I follow the Premiership, says David in Cavan. Has to be Italy. Won't be devastated if England do it, because the squad as a whole are quite likable. Glad England beat Denmark. Denmark as a nation are an arrogant bunch. Don't care who wins Sunday, but let's be honest. We all watch the Premier League, and the English team in Southgate are a sympathetic bunch, says Hugh in Cork. Park the history. It's all about football. I think of England that if they win it, it'll be great for the football, and a lot of our young kids develop their game there. So I'm cheering on England. England media and supporters will be unbearable if they win. Come on, Italy. Martin in Dublin. Shane Keegan, I remember speaking to you at the very start in our Euros preview, many weeks ago it was, and I said about England, and you just mentioned two words: Jordan Pickford. Are you still worried about Jordan going into tomorrow?
We talk about the likability of that England team. Jordan is about the only one who still bucks the trend for me in that front now, I'll tell you that. Gee, that man just rubs me up the wrong way. And yeah, he returned to form on Saturday evening, or returned to the form we know him more notably for, probably is the best way to phrase it. Because to be fair to him, he has been very, very good up until the semi. But it was car crash stuff. He was very, very, very lucky to get away on, what, 3-4 occasions? With some of the stuff that he did, and look, it has to be, I don't know if a worry is the word I'd use, but it's a question mark, and it's a question mark you could do without going into it. I mean, give me a keeper who's going to be 8 out of 10 every time for you, rather than one who's going to have his 9s, but also going to have his 6s, and that's Pickford. Look, he's been that good in previous games. He could deliver that again tomorrow night. He could be man of the match, God knows, but he could also be the reason that they don't win it. Whereas you definitely would not say the same about Donnarumma. You absolutely would not. He will either have a good solid game or an outstanding game.
Mark, how unsettling is it as a centre half when you've got someone like Pickford who misplaced more than half his passes against Denmark?
Well, it was skitty, wasn't he? That was a problem. And I think he'd probably been reading the papers and the headlines because he'd done extremely well beforehand. You know, his goalkeeping, not that he's had too much to do, but also in terms of finding players with long-range passes had been very, very good. But, you know, you might say, I mean, he didn't play well the other night, and I totally agree with everything that's been said, but you'd argue that Kane didn't play very well in the first two games. So everybody's allowed one. Maybe that's his in the semi-final. I remember him coming to Preston on loan. I think it was from Sunderland, John, and he was very, very raw indeed, but he's kicking for a youngster and for like the championship was sensational at the time, and you kind of thought then, wow, this lad could go on to play for his country. So I get it, but he's not had the greatest of seasons, but generally you'd look at him and you know, is it 6 or 9? I would say generally in this competition he's probably been 8 to 9, and then he had a 6 the other night, so he needs to turn that upside down, doesn't he?
Okay, this is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. England Italy preview ahead of tomorrow's European Championship final with Mark Lawrence and Dan McDonnell and Shane Keegan. Text your questions, your opinions into 53106. We've got to take a break. We're back after the news on Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk.
Paddy Power, as much a part of Irish football as celebrating a home draw.
You are welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 8 o'clock because we got commentary of the Lions against the Sharks at 5. We're joined to talk about England-Italy by Mark Lawrenson, the former Republic of Ireland international and the Liverpool legend, football correspondent of the Irish Independent, Dan McDonnell, and the UEFA Pro Licence coach, Shane Keegan. Football and Off the Ball, thanks to Paddy Power, Save Our Game, donating €10,000 to Irish football for every England goal scored at the Euros. The 10 goals so far amounting to €100,000 for Irish football. Text number 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. We're streaming the conversation as well. Listen on News Talk. Watch us on the digital and social channels for Periscope on Twitter, at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. 53106. Rory in Cork says England team are fine, bordering likeable, but the fans are a disgrace. Booing anthems and general behaviour towards rival fans. One of the great anthems will be ruined tomorrow. Hope it inspires the Italians. You can text us your opinions, your questions on England initially to 53106. Let's go through the teams then, Mark Lawrenson. England probably will play 4-2-3-1 again. I don't think Southgate will make any changes, but should he?
Maybe think he might make one, John.
Henderson?
Purely and simply because obviously the Italians will play 4-3-3 and those three midfield players are all outstanding players. And I don't think that you'd want to go into the game against the Italians with just Rice and Phillips as well. So he might leave Mason Mount out. I might play another, maybe even a Henderson. You never ever know. But because he's been very, very cautious. And he will not want Italy to take the lead because obviously we think defensively they're very, very good anyway. But that's the only thing I can really see, to be honest with you.
Would you play Saka then and Sterling behind Kane?
Yeah, I would. You know, pace, dribbling ability, directness. Saka gets his head up and makes a pass. I mean, you'd argue in this tournament that Sterling's in the form of his life. You know, if he's not scoring goals, he's making goals. When he was at Liverpool, he just played. He slowly kind of learnt why he was in the team, how he was in the team, what he was in the team for. He went to Manchester City and that obviously got improved remarkably. Then he had a spell at City where you kind of thought, well, he's gone a little bit backwards, but in this tournament, I think he's been England's best player because he's just basically scoring most of the goals, and if he's not, he's involved in all of them.
Shane, you're the coach. Would you play Henderson tomorrow? Would you change the England team?
If I was going to play Henderson, it would be for either Rice or Phillips. I actually think the most fascinating tactical part of this game is potentially going to be in that area that Mount has been playing in. The reason I think it's such a key matchup is just because Jorginho's influence on this Italian team is absolutely massive. But if you think back to some Premier League games where teams have had success against Chelsea, it's been by designating somebody to sit on top of him and completely and utterly try and disrupt his play as much as possible. Now, that gets an added interesting element if the person who's designated to do that job is his club teammate. Mount hasn't been fantastic, but he does strike me as the kind of fella that can, yeah, he has that bit of creativity, but he's also happy enough to put in a shift for you. And I think he probably will keep his place, because I think Southgate will say to him, listen, yep, we want you to come up with the goods. We want you to try and, you know, possibly get a shot away for us and maybe come up with a killer pass for us. But I'll tell you what your main job is. Shut your club teammate down for us tonight. You shut him down for us and look, do a job for us there for 70 minutes, and we'll bring in fresh legs then maybe for the last 20 to continue that job. I think that might be the detail that Southgate gives him. The other one I'd throw into it, John, is I'd like to see them, even though I'm contradicting myself here a bit, but even though I agree fully that Sterling is better from the left-hand side than the right, I just think the way Italy's set up, I'd like to see them go with Sterling on the right. I really would. They did it the other night when they made the change when Grealish came on, because Grealish definitely is better on the left. Grealish came on the left and Sterling switched from the left across to the right. You look at that Italian setup and, you know, they're quite conservative with the role of the right back, regardless of who plays that role. It's not somebody who bombs on. And I think for Sterling to be Sterling's been fantastic, but for him to continue to be that effective, he's going to need to find a bit of space. And I just think he'd have far, far more opportunity to find some space in behind the left back than he would the right back. So, like, Saka's been decent. He's done nothing to deserve to be left out. But just tactically, in terms of how you get at them, I probably would go Grealish off the left and Sterling off the right-hand side. But I don't know. I can't see Southgate ruffling the starting 11 too much from the other night.
And maybe, Dan, it's because if England are going to win this, it's going to be their bench and their pace and the fact that they'll wear Italy down. And Italy, I know Spain own the ball there tonight, but if Grealish comes on at 60 minutes and he plays extra time, that's an hour of Grealish. Maybe there's a method in the madness of keeping someone like that in reserve.
Yeah, no, listen, I understand the argument about, you know, Italy fading potentially, and I think there's obviously an age factor. You look at the centre halves, but I don't know, I've been thinking about it as well. Like, you know, they've had since Tuesday, there's no way England will own the ball in the same way and potentially sort of tire them out in the way that Spain can tire out a team. I don't believe anyway. I think you know, is the, you know, the lads sort of broke it down sort of well there in terms of the various equations of it. Like, and it's interesting what Shane says about switching sides with Sterling, because obviously, you know, like, one of the big questions is with Insigne, and also how he's going to cause England problems. You know, what they're going to do defensively with him and his movement, and that's obviously, you know, going to ask questions of really their whole midfielders. Going to ask questions potentially of everyone, but. Like, the thing about Italy is they do give up, they have given up chances in this competition. For all that we talk about the sort of, you revert the cliche about Italy getting the job done and the veteran defenders. I mean, Austria posed them some problems. You know, we saw Spain do it. And you definitely think that, like, Sterling and Saka are absolutely key players for England in this game. And you sort of wonder at times, how conservative are England going to be? Like, I see what Mark said there about Henderson. Like, there definitely seems to be a speculation in the English press that they're very much tempted to bring Henderson into the mix in some shape or form. But surely if you went in with Rice and Phillips, that would be almost just too conservative in a way. And then you're not necessarily going to stretch it other than on the break. So there's a lot of aspects and angles to the game. And listen, the 120 minute aspect to it is a very significant one. I don't know. Do we think, and I don't know what the lads think on this, like, do we think that, you know, in Southgate's mind, to bring Grealish into the mix, does he think that England are going to be really dominant? Like, you brought them in the other day as Denmark were maybe fading a bit and England were on top of them. But I don't know, lads, do we think Grealish comes on if the game is tight and it's nil all, but there's no signs that Italy are sort of creaking or fading in any way and that it's a bit 50-50 on possession? Like, I don't know. I don't know what the lads think on that.
Mark?
No, I would just bring Grealish on. You know, and I think he quite, as much as possible, of course you want to start for your country, but I think he quite enjoys the role. You know, the supporters get behind him, and he comes. We know how good he is at getting free kicks, etc., but he'll keep the ball for you. He looks to play 1-2s in and around the opposition penalty area. He goes past people as well. I would leave him where he is, and I'd let, you know, the likes of Sterling, Saka bomb away at the back four of Italy for the 60, 65 minutes, however long they think it's going to take.
Will anybody else get a look in? It's amazing that, like, Bellingham, Rashford, Sancho. Sancho played one game that they haven't got a look in. That's an embarrassment of riches on that benchmark.
There is, but no, I don't think so. I can't. You know, he doesn't waver very much. Does he? We know he changes it, and he can change the system, stroke formation, but he doesn't change it too much from the norm. And he's quite right, really, because, you know, you're still probably, you know, when the tournament started, maybe the first team that he picked, they all hadn't played together on a regular basis for England. So it's important, and I'm sure the lads will understand that, you know, that the more you play alongside and with somebody, the more you realise, you know, there are strengths and also, of course, the weaknesses. And I think that's really, really important not to change the team too much at all.
How do England cater then for the Italian attack, Mark? Because Chiesa was just brilliant the other night, I felt, and Insigne and Immobile will be the other players in the team, Insigne getting that goal against Belgium.
Well, I tell you who's been brilliant for England. He's been Walker, hasn't he? You know, in terms of his recovery and everything when he's played there. And I think he's like an insurance policy. Doesn't really seem to want to bomb on too much. And defensively, he's really been at it. And, you know, Stones and obviously Harry Maguire, they've improved as each game's gone on as well. And the other thing, John, and quite the blindingly obvious thing would be, like, stop Chiesa getting the ball as good as he's been. And on all these players who are playing tomorrow, they can't really play without the ball, no matter who they are.
What do you see about the Italian threats, Shane, tactically?
Look, their front three, I suppose the thing with Italy is they've relied on, for a team that are a fantastic unit and seem to have great togetherness, they have actually relied on a lot of individual moments for some of the goals that they have come up with. And probably all three of those that front three you've named have all got that in them. Look, their midfield, I think their midfield is superior to the English midfield. But again, tactically, I think that's going to be interesting because you've got two things going on. Technically, I think they're better at keeping the ball than England are. But when England have the ball, what is going to be Italy's approach? Are they going to try and get up and in their face to try and get the ball back as quickly as possible? I mean, if the midfield take a proactive approach of getting up and getting in England's face, well, then the backline have no option but to follow them up the field, or else they leave a big, huge gap in front of them. And if the backline follow them up the field, well, is that not exactly what the likes of Sterling, with, you know, latching onto a true ball from Kane with a bit of space in behind, want? So it's going to be very, very kind of cat and mouse. I think Italy, even though they have better technical players, I think when England have the ball, they'll be quite happy to leave England have the ball, and they'll actually sit off and would go with quite a low block. And then when they retain it, but I think essentially what I'm saying is I think both teams will have the ball for long periods of time. Italy because of their technical quality, and England because of Italy's possible unwillingness to go and press them high up the field. I actually think, John, obviously we're all hoping for a fantastic spectacle. I'm not so sure we're going to get it. I'm really, really not. I think it's going to be a real, real cat and mouse one. I think both teams will be very, very slow to roll the dice and really, really go for it. I'm still not sure who's going to win the game, but I can see it being a 1-0 win with the goal potentially coming in the extra time period. I think we could go the opening 90 minutes without seeing a goal. I really hope I'm proved wrong.
5-3-1-6, Italy should concentrate on Pickford and Maguire as weak defensive links, says Pat in Dublin. Another texter, Italy play high press, England are playing a Mourinho style, high press always wins. And Pickford is like the Emperor's new clothes, an absolute liability. No English pundit wants to address it. Watch the Italians chase every back pass on Sunday, says Michael in Dublin. Dan, you've been to Eurofinals. The majesty of the occasion, the pressure, how much of a factor do you think that'll be for England tomorrow? Because this is unknown territory, uncharted waters.
I suppose it is, but like they have faced it for the Germany game and for the Denmark game. I mean, I know obviously the capacity has gone up from the group stages to the knockouts and you know, for the semis and final. But I don't know. That's a very hard thing to sort of to quantify it, because I think, to be fair, like what was impressive on Wednesday certainly was. And it was the question mark people debated beforehand, like how they would respond to falling behind, and they handled it. And for all that, listen, it was a dodgy penalty. They had established control over the game and over the situation. So, like, you know, they're still quite a young group in some ways. And yeah, you can easily say, well, you know, Italy have been there before and stuff. But like, you even look at sort of Cellini and you know, Bonucci, that Juventus team, like they've been part of a Juventus team, or they were for a period of time, and like, you know, Juventus couldn't get the Champions League won, you know, like they've had issues at latter stages. And we have this sort of a stereotypical view about teams that win stuff and teams that don't, but actually this English group maybe aren't burdened by too many disappointments in their, it's new for a lot of them, and maybe that's a good thing, you know, maybe that is a, you know, they seem to have embraced it in some way, but I don't know. Like, I mean, it's a final with home advantage. I mean, I was at the last final in 2016 where France had that and they lost to Portugal. You know, it doesn't give you anything, and people can freeze in the day. But I don't know if that's a major question mark. Maybe with the exception of Pickford, as Shane mentioned, like, you know, he had a sort of a few heart-stopping moments. But I just have this feeling that they don't seem to be carrying too much baggage with them, and that could be a powerful thing for them in this situation. It really could.
5-3-1-6, lads. When you break it down, Italy have the better team apart from Kane and Sterling. How many England players would get into that Italy team? Italy got a much better spine in terms of goalkeeper, centre back, and midfield. Games are won in midfield, and England have great pace though in their team. Harry Kane would get in the England team for me, Mark. Would he get in your Italy team if Harry Kane was able to transfer?
Absolutely, all day long. Yeah, 100%. Because he can be whatever you want him to be, and you know, with service, obviously, he's such a different player, John. Like anybody, basically. But yeah, he's got a bit of everything. As we can drop off, play up there as a number nine. We saw his pass the other night against Denmark to create the opportunity eventually for the own goal, etc. No, he'd be in any team in the world for me now.
You've been to many Euro finals, Mark, I'd expect. What stands out from a previous Euro final in terms of the significance of the occasion and the pressure, and who responds to that pressure?
Well, generally, they're not great games. The best one I was at was the golden goal, wasn't it? Wasn't it?
Trezeguet, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and which was strange in itself, because when the goal goes in, everybody goes home. But that was an outstanding game, and I'm pretty sure. And we're all talking about, you know, the quality of substitutions tomorrow night that England can make. I'm pretty sure in that game, two of the substitutions that the French made, Trezeguet being one, I think, and I don't know who was the other, they actually scored.
I think it might be Wiltord off the top of my head.
Yeah, and they really did change the game, literally. And I think this is a game that's going to be very, very similar tomorrow night, and it's nobody will want to give anything away. You know, we're saying that generally England have looked pretty cool, etc. But, you know, they've had three or four days. They will have been reading the papers, John. They will have been listening to Sky, to all the stations, radio, etc. And it does get you. And they will be nervous, because anybody who plays tomorrow for England starts and tells you that they're nervous is totally lying. It's impossible. To be honest with you, it's the best cure for constipation you can ever find, playing in a massive game like this. So we don't know how people are going to react. And maybe that's the way that, you know, England's goalkeeper was the other night, because he just felt the pressure.
Was it more nervous for you than playing in Rome in 1984 in European Cup final than other big league games?
Oh, yeah, because, you know, to win... the highest competition at club level is just a massive thing, and you're there with all your mates, aren't you? It's a little bit different internationally, but even then, you know, the pressure was really transferred to Rome. Roma were playing at home. They had most of the pressure, but you still felt it. You still thought, oh, Christ, please don't let me make a mistake or something like that, whatever. And, it's monumental in the end. I was, in the really big games, I would take myself off and just say to myself, look, you know, nobody is going to die on the football pitch, so whatever happens, and you can only do your best. And you want to see some of the sights in the dressing rooms before those massive games, and the lads are just an absolute bundle of nerves.
Did you get sick?
No, I never got sick.
Did they?
Fortunately, I would. Where I was lucky was when we're at Anfield for any of the for all the games. I used to clear off into the boot room, into the old treatment room and try and do one of the crosswords, purely and simply, because it just occupied my mind. I didn't want to sit amongst all the lads and they're all, you know, one boot on, one boot off, and all the superstitions and all that kind of stuff and the absolute rubbish that you talk before you go and play. And I was always of the opinion that, you know, when you're playing against certainly the top teams, if you're playing on a Saturday, I would have done most of my mental stuff on Thursday thinking about who we were possibly playing against directly, myself and obviously Big Al and stuff. And I kind of was working that out on the Thursday, and it was just before the game. It was just all about yourself and making sure you were right.
A long time before sports psychologist, Shane.
Yeah, that's for sure. Sneaking off for a crossword, I have to say, is not one I've heard before. Definitely not one I've heard before. But yeah, the mental side of it will be interesting. I suppose there's two ways of looking at it. You just, whether it's the case or whether it's not the case, we see the Italians as being mental masters. And I think we have question marks over how England will handle the occasion, whereas we probably, whether we're rightly or wrongly, we probably don't have any question marks over whether Italy will handle the occasion. We just assume that they will because of, I suppose, that's the way we think when we look at them. But England have put so much preparation into this. I've read a couple of pieces about their backroom teams. They went incredibly heavy on performance analysis and stats and all that. But they've also gone incredibly heavy on the sports psychology side of things. And they will have looked at every single facet of it. And to be fair, they have, you know, they have looked, as Dan was kind of saying, they have looked at like a team unburdened of the usual kind of pressure. Obviously the pressure does exist, but it just doesn't seem to weigh as heavily on their shoulders. And I think they'll deliver a good performance tomorrow night, particularly Sterling. Just, to me, you know, he looks like a fella who's really, really enjoying it, and I think he's going to be going in tomorrow night licking his lips rather than, oh my god, the expectation and the whole nation is back, is watching me, or anything like that. But that's not to say that they'll win it. But I do think if they don't win it tomorrow night, I don't think it'll be because they've allowed the occasion to get on top of them. I don't see that England team collapsing to that in the way that previous ones might have.
53106, England haven't been tested unlike Italy, says one of our texters. Their midfield is too workmanlike with Rice and Phillips. England's issue is that all their best players play in the same position in those wide forward roles. Italy needed to press them into mistakes. Fascinating game. Mancini's managed in England. You may have a good understanding of their weaknesses on a micro level. Surely you can't be European champions with Pickford in goal, says Rob. Yeah, we have talked a lot about Southgate, haven't we, Dan? But not much about Mancini, who will be crowning glory for him after a lot of frustrations as a player at the very top level with his country.
Yeah, it's a historic figure, I suppose, in the sense of a number of levels. Like, it was actually a very interesting profile piece. I think it was The Athletic I was reading a profile piece about, back even when he was at Sampdoria, he was such a strong figure that he was actually on the interview panel as a player interviewing for management, you know, for the managerial position.
Right.
It's very, very unusual. And I assume then, I don't know, like, you know, suggest the power of personality that was there. And I think the piece was more so touching on his Man City time, where he actually was a sort of a divisive figure in some ways. Like, he could sort of, you know, he wasn't especially warm to all of his players. He could be very hard on them. And as much as he was the manager for, like, the historic, you know, Aguero moment and the Man City breakthrough, they always seemed to be sort of running battles with players and they didn't know where they stand with them. Yet we look from the outside here and it looks like this Italian team, he looks to have created a really strong bond with the group, and he appears to be a part of it with Viali and his old Sampdoria crew, and maybe even like he's at a different stage of his managerial life. He's a bit older, and maybe I don't know, completely speculating, not as maybe intense and as hard going as it appeared he could have been at his man during a sort of his Man City pomp, where it seemed like he fell out with a lot of people. So it is an amazing story for him, like, you know, and this Southgate is too. But I suppose Mancini, like, there's sort of a certain romanticism about that time in Italian football when he was a player, and him and Vialli all doing it together. It would be a great moment for him. It would be a terrific moment for him.
Great tailoring as well. The tailoring has been breathtaking.
Well, I mean, they started off. I mean, they did start off. If they do win this, I assume people are going to have their squad announcement on Italian TV at the start of the tournament, where, like, it was almost Eurovision-esque in some respects, or how they... X Factor or something, had he introduced all the players smartly dressed one by one. But honestly, like, they just seem to be, they seem to be nicely self-aware in a way and enjoying the moment. And I think we've probably spoke about it in previous weeks. And probably actually both these teams, for all, people talk about international football as about unity and it's a bond and it's not like club where you can buy players. Like, you do hear rumblings always of camps being unhappy and little issues, whereas the two teams that have met it all the way here, they do seem to have a quite strong bond that actually after 5-6 weeks away together, they don't want to kill each other. You know, they seem to have strengthened their union, and maybe there's something in how these teams have lasted the course.
5-3-1-6, interesting to see how Italy will deal with Sterling and Kane. Mark, will it be a case of the dark arts, asks one of our texters.
Well, for Italy, oh yeah, won't be from England. Oh, crikey, yeah. What do they call it? John, revert to type. If they're 1-0 up with 10 minutes to go, they'll all be falling all over the place. We saw that, didn't we? In, was it the Belgian game?
Yeah.
I think. So yeah, oh yes, 100%.
You never did that as a defender, Mark.
No.
Shane Keegan, It's fascinating to see what's going to happen with the Bonucci and Chiellini and all these players if they're ahead. They're going to test England's patience.
Yeah, they certainly will. Look, as we say, we've seen it in the earlier rounds that they can play football when they need to play football, but they can run the clock down, as I've said before, in a manner that Ollie Horgan would be proud of when they need to do that side of it as well. That's for sure. And look, I think they'll come out on top, John. If I was really, really pushed, I think they'll come out on top. And again, maybe it's me buying into the narrative too much. You know, Dan has maybe made one or two points almost against the narrative, but I just can't get away from the fact that I think when it comes down to it, they might just be that little bit too streetwise for them. I find it hard to see Kane or Sterling getting the kind of room that they might need to really, really come out and top on it. And look, I think it's going to be really, really cagey affair. And that's why I would like to see England really open up. I'd like to see them go at it. I think if they really, really go at it and be that bit more risky with the fullbacks, I think they could, particularly with Spinazzola being out, I think they could have massive success going at them down that left-hand side. But I just think if they fall into the chess match type game, the cat and mouse type game, I just think, look, cliche as it is, I just think the Italians might be too streetwise for them.
We'll get verdicts in a moment from yourself, Shane, Dan and Mark Lawrence. Have you met Mancini many times, Mark? Did you come across him on your broadcasting travels?
A couple of times. I was spectator. I was at Blackpool, Liverpool in the Premier League, and he came into the box where we were in and, you know, kind of said hello to everybody, and we were all having something to eat, and this waitress came in and bought him a plate of, I think it was like fried chicken and other stuff like that, and he sort of looked at her and pushed it away. Then he noted a bottle of red in the middle of the table, leant over, looked at it, and he just opened it and started drinking. So I thought, it can't be all bad.
Okay. 53106, just so we'll talk about the League of Ireland in a second. Here's a good tweet, a good text as well. In general, lads, I think it's been a fairly unfair tournament, one of inequality in terms of game location and team travel. If I knew England had this many home games, UEFA should have just given the tournament to England as hosts. England took advantage of the favourable draw and done well. England won't bottle this game, but whether they're good enough to beat a top team, even at home, remains to be seen. It's just the way it's worked out, hasn't it, with everything with COVID and that. I don't think we're going to have a repeat of this, Dan, though. I think it'll be in countries from the next tournament on. It's going to be in Germany, isn't it, the next one?
Oh, yeah. Listen, this was something that the current UEFA people inherited. I mean, it was a sort of a Platini brainchild initially, and I think our lad was taking credit for some of it for a while as well. But anyway, no, I don't think it's on the. I think Sheffield has said as much. It's not going to happen again, I think, and that's a good thing. You know, it's like, I mean, I suppose you could say, like, in fairness, you know, we over here did give England home advantage against Germany in the round of 16, so we've played our part by stepping out of the competition. It would have been England, Germany, and Dublin. It might have had a certainly different vibe in the crowd, I would suspect.
Absolutely.
John?
Yeah, go on, Mark.
Did you hear what happened to the Danes before they played England? And they played in Baku.
Yeah.
And they wanted to fly out that night straight after the game because generally, historically, you know, after a game you don't sleep for hours and hours and hours as a player, and you're kind of kicking the game over in your mind. They wouldn't let them fly straight out. They had to fly back the next day, and the Danes were saying that they'd almost lost at least, you know, an awful lot of sleep, etc., and they got the right hump, but it didn't seem to get much coverage in the press, that.
Any reason why?
Why they did it?
Yeah.
UEFA?
Yeah.
Probably because they can.
Okay. Interesting story. Mm. Just before we get to kind of a summation of this, just about the Irish teams in Europe this week, Dan. Rovers lost, Shamrock Rovers, Sligo Rovers lost, Bohemians drew, Dundalk won. What do we take away from it?
Shamrock Rovers, Champions League level against Slovan Bratislava, good side. Yeah, I mean, 2-0 was probably a fair enough reflection of the game. They just didn't really ask enough questions. I think I've made the point this week. I think they miss having someone like Jack Byrne at that level, I think. And some of the more creative players either weren't fit or weren't involved. And it's a big ask for them in the second leg. As for the others, yeah, I mean, Dundalk played against a pretty average Welsh side, but they were still good and beat them comfortably. And that's a stroll through. Bohemians, the two teams in Iceland, it seems like Sligo Rovers really... big time, and they're missing Greg Gulger for the second leg. But Bohs at the Aviva this Thursday, 1-1, they should be capable of getting through that tie. And I think Sligo Rovers, like from the evidence of the first legs, I think the three teams in the Conference League will have some regrets if they don't all go through. Dundalk obviously will, and I think the other two are very capable of doing it. But we hope we have a good news story to talk about. Shamrock Rovers, it looks more likely they're going to be dropping down into that competition the way things are looking.
Okay, 5-3-1-6. England have already semi-choked against a well-drilled and patient Scotland. This could easily be repeated by Italy, says Brian. My prediction, 80% of the listeners who say they'll be supporting England will not be supporting them in the following tournament if England win, says one of our texters. And it's been a brilliant tournament, but the worst performance has been Steven Gerrard in that ad, says another one of our texters on 53106. Shane Keegan, if you're going to sum up the Euros, I've really enjoyed it. I've loved the carnival, and it feels like we're getting back to some semblance of normality in society. Have you enjoyed it?
Brilliant, John. It's been a fantastic tournament in terms of the quality of the football, but obviously also just because it's just been wonderful to see fans back. And it just... It's a different sport, isn't it? It really is a different sport watching it when the crowds are behind, and watching the emotion, the emotion off the pitch, but also the emotion on the pitch goes up a considerable percentage as well when the fans are back around. So it's football's been a hard enough watch, John, since COVID kicked in. It really, really has. I've found it very, very tough, to be honest with you. I'm one of those who found himself in the last couple of months cancelling their Sky Sports. You know, I haven't been able to watch that. Sit down, and I haven't got the same buzz I was sitting down and watching Premier League games by any stretch of the imagination. But all of a sudden, the Euros has kind of reinvigorated me, and I'm thinking, oh Lord, can I head into a Premier League season without Sky Sports in the Premier League all over again? But the quality of the games has been fantastic as well. I can't think of the last tournament where we've consistently had such top-notch games. Looked the very odd poor one running in between, and some fantastic performances. I mean, Spinazzola, you know, I don't think a fullback has grabbed the attention probably since Roberto Carlos in a major tournament. He's been fantastic to watch. Pedri, for me, I'd watch him all day long. I just think he is fantastic. He is incredible footballer. I look forward to the next 10-15 years of him. Kane rediscovering his form alongside Sterling. They've been really, really good to watch. It's been a super tournament. I think we've been lucky to have it and put a smile back on all our faces.
And Italy to win tomorrow for you?
Italy to win. Yeah, I wouldn't say it with any great certainty. I think it'll be a 1-0 win. I can't see it being a goal fest. It could just as easy be an English 1-0 win. But if I was really pushed that edge for Italy, 1-0 probably, yeah.
Okay, Shane Keegan. Dan McDonald, your kind of summation of the tournament and your verdict tomorrow?
Oh, listen, the tournament overall, yeah, it's been very good. It's funny, the whole debate about whether 24 teams dilutes it and takes away, takes away what was the perfect tournament. Like that's actually gone away, that discussion. But that's because the knockout games really delivered. And we've actually had some tournaments in recent memories, to be fair, where the group stage has actually been very enjoyable. But then it just peters out because, you know, conservatism really takes over in the knockouts. And that hasn't really been the case here. And actually, in a way, the sort of slightly convoluted group stages ended on a high with that sort of France, Germany, Hungary, Portugal group and all the drama. And it just seemed like that sort of momentum really carried into the round of 16. So, yeah, listen, the football has been great. It was a TV tournament, as mentioned. Like, we haven't had really, you know, with the exception of sort of, you know, home teams, we haven't had that sort of carnival festival atmosphere that is created by, you know, everyone coming together in one country. And you certainly miss that, but maybe that's just selfish because, you might have been around that if that was the case. But I think, like, football-wise, it's delivered on all the metrics. And in terms of the final tomorrow, yeah, like, it might well be for a victory for the team that can master the dark arts and managing the referee and winning the freeze and all of that. But that's England. Right? They're very good at that too. And let's not revert to stereotype. They're very good at that. And that could end up being very significant. So I just have a funny feeling England might do this.
Okay, Dan. And Mark Lawrenson, have you enjoyed the Euros over the last few weeks? And who do you think is going to lift that trophy tomorrow?
I have enjoyed the Euros. I thought that generally that the league basis, John, was just for the bigger teams, in inverted commas, to get through, almost like a safety blanket. And I think some of the football in knockout stages has been excellent. As we spoke before, it's not going to be the same tournament again. It's just going to be in one country. England have had a tremendous advantage, regardless what you think about them. And I think they're going to win, but I think they're going to win on penalties.
Okay. All right, Laro, Dan and Johnny, enjoy the game tomorrow night. Thanks so much for speaking to us, as always.
Thank you.
Cheers, Jenny.
Thanks.
Dan McDonald there, Shane Keegan and Mark Lawrenson on OTB Football Saturday.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as celebrating a home draw.